just because you look around and you don't see yourself comparatively like adding up to what's around you doesn't mean that you aren't on a fucking epic journey that's fucking beautiful and magnificent and totally important. And I think that the desire to compare ourselves, the desire to be like other things, that is not you. We need to recognize that we don't need to look like other things to be complete, to be okay. I think that's propaganda. I think that's a bullshit idea.
This is Way of the Artist with Brandon Colby Cook and Evan Schulte.
Exploring the challenges of the creative call.
So that you can claim your own path.
And make your life a work of art.
It's that time. That sweet, sweet podcast time. Okay, Evan, I got him to giggle a little. That's part of my goal usually when I start because it entertains me. And honestly, after hundreds of podcasts, I never really know how to start talking about stuff. Anyway, this one, if you've tuned in, we call these Artist Wisdom Series because we take a quote from somebody. Somebody usually who has some type of creative insight, not always an artist, sometimes an artist, sometimes a scientist, sometimes a mathematician, but we will look for wisdoms of other great thinkers and then we will ponder the thought of their quote. And one came up this week, which we thought, hey, this is pretty good. Let's entertain this idea. And this is by Paulo Coelho. That's how you say it, right? Well, I think so. Maybe. Anyway, it's how I say it. So if I'm wrong, Paulo, come on the podcast. Let's talk. Anyway, so his quote is this. Maybe the journey isn't so much about becoming anything. Maybe it's about unbecoming everything that isn't really you. So you can be who you were meant to be in the first place. And yeah, Evan and I had a pretty big talk leading up to this. Many things said. Could have recorded two podcasts today based on this conversation. But here you are. After an hour or two of preparation, so to speak. And we're gonna talk about this. I am guilty of this idea that I need to always add to myself. I need to build upon myself. I need to grow into something. I need to become more and more and more. And I think we can all relate to that. But there's a part of this also is like, what do I need to chip away at? What do I need to trim? You know, if I was a plant growing towards my sun. You know, maybe there is a part of me that is kind of was growing in a way that is irrelevant now. And, or maybe there is just like layers of the onion that if I maybe shed them away, there's something richer underneath that could be exposed. And I think something that this brings up for me is that I'm sure many can relate is that sometimes I think we have a fear of losing things. And that drives us to not always want to let things go. And so the unbecoming element of this, you know, I think of how sometimes I'm hanging on to something is actually holding me back. And if I could just let it go and not identify with it, not become it, not need to have it be a part of me anymore, I would actually be free. And, you know, quite honestly, I think something ends up coming to take its place when you let it go. And you're not really losing anything. A lot of the time, you're just making space for something else. There's many ways to look at this, you know, and I think it's going to be interesting. So I'll pass it to Evan, and here's what he has to say.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because Paulo Coelho, if we are saying his name right, I know that he wrote, I own one of his books, I'm almost positive, that I've never read. And I'm trying to remember what it is. It's a fairly famous book, to my recollection. I can't think of what it is. But anyhow, I don't know him too well, but yeah, loved the quote. And you know, just in terms of how you opened this conversation up, you know, that sort of unbecoming. You know, we've talked quite a bit on this podcast about conditioning. You know, like it's a big thing in being a person because we're all subject to conditioning. Conditioning of our families, our friends, our countries, our culture, our, you know, there's, we are, we take all of these things on that we're exposed to as we're becoming older, and the, which is part of the quote as well, which is like to become, you know, so you can become the thing you're supposed to be in the first place, something like, yes, like that, is, which is interesting, right? Because it implies that there's this person that was always there and was there from the beginning, and somewhere along the way got a little bit lost. Somewhere along the way, you know, it, you know, this being began to take on all of this other stuff that doesn't truly belong to the person. We've all, in some ways, we've done that, right? We've all been, to use a different word, we've all been propagandized. Mm-hmm. You know, is another way of thinking of conditioning, right? Is someone else's propaganda, right? And we do it to each other all the time. We don't necessarily mean to do it, and it's not necessarily meant to be insidious in the way that we often think about propaganda, yeah, right? Like it's not all like 1984 propaganda type of thing. It can be just anything that a person puts on you about, like, well, this is what a good life is, and this is how you should be living your life, and blah, blah, blah. That's somebody's propaganda, or to put it in the words of Ram Dass, that's somebody laying their trip on you, right? And it's a terrific task that we all have in front of us to confront all of those things, and so that we can learn to uncondition ourselves, to become undone in so many respects, so that that true being, that true self can emerge more. Or as I like that you use the word space, right? Because I think often when we have realizations about ourselves, like of very deep and true things about ourselves, it does have that sensation of like, oh, there's this space here. There's a space here that I, you know, inside me somehow, somewhere, that, you know, it's not actually physical, but it's this sense, you know, that suddenly there's this room that wasn't there before. Or there's, you know, we often feel it as like weight, you know, it's like, oh, there's a weight that isn't here. There's a, or that's been lifted. You know, I think it's kind of a similar sensation, right? But yeah, this burden that I had is no longer here. This burden of trying to be somebody that I'm not, of trying to do something that has actually got nothing to do with the person that I am. And that quest for, yeah, our true self and authenticity, as we might say in our modern vernacular, right? Although I get weary of the word authenticity these days. It's just, I feel like it's hurled around so often these days, right? You know, especially when you throw branding in to that, that lingo. It's like, you need to have an authentic brand. It's like, I don't know. Authentic brand might be an oxymoron. Anyhow, I'm getting sidetracked. But you know, that's some of the stuff that's jumping to my mind just off of your opening comments. And there's a few other quotes that came, well, there was at least one quote that came to my mind that I thought of with the one that we opened up with. And you also brought in another one, which might be interesting as well too, because I think they kind of complement each other. So yeah, I'll just throw the one that it brought up for me, which is from a great Buddhist teacher, Pema Chodron, and she said something, I won't get this exactly right, as is usually the case, but she said awakening is a process of continual annihilation until only what is true remains. So you know, that was just kind of another one. I think that's like, it just fits nicely in with this quote we came in with. So I'm excited to dive further into this.
Yeah, me too. You know what? Because we're going to share some other quotes on here, I'm going to reread the quote that we're working with just so people can hear it again. I think it's good because, you know, we've talked about a few things now. Maybe the journey isn't so much about becoming anything. Maybe it's about unbecoming everything that isn't really you, so you can be who you were meant to be in the first place. I mean, there are so many things in my life where I was trying to live up to stuff that wasn't really me. It wasn't really my values. But when you don't know your values yet, when you haven't really kind of figured that stuff out, you've just kind of been told what to value. You think those are your values. And I think that's part of the unbecoming, is like recognizing that I don't actually value this the way that I thought I did. I thought it was important to me. And maybe, like, sometimes I don't know where that comes from. Sometimes I have a pretty easy way of tracking it. But other times it's like, I don't even know why I have that thought or why I think that. And I think that's part of the interesting thing about values, is that there are some values that kind of don't really change. And then there are these other values that they need to change. And if they don't change, there is going to be a prison cell built, metaphorically, for you. And you'll be enslaved to them. And it's a weird thing, because your identity is kind of tied up in a lot of these values, and like who you think you are and what life's supposed to be and all of this stuff. And, you know, so there's a kind of a pride and an ego involved with some of this stuff, which I think for me has been, you know, I mean, when I think about this kind of the things that aren't really me, I think of the ego that got created to protect me. And everybody does this, but you know, and we don't always have full awareness of how this is. And I mean, I only have as much awareness of myself as I do, but of my own process, but recognizing that the ego was created in a lot of ways to protect me. And so then I identified with it so that I could just kind of, but I didn't know any better. And so I'm just functioning through life with this idea of who I need to be. One of the things was like, I don't know, here's a good one, like looking cool or looking good. And I remember, you know, for those who follow the podcast, they'll probably know some lineage here. My dad and I have a very interesting relationship, you know, and it hasn't been perfect by any means, but, you know, I think, regardless of your relationship with your parents, they give you tons of gifts. And I remember my dad would often share, it's like, yeah, you know, he'd share very vulnerably and open with me, is this, he had this trouble with looking good. He always wanted to look good. And, you know, I know my dad, you know, he did a lot to bolster his image. He did a lot to create a certain appearance of success and power and whatever. And, he recognized at a certain point in his life that if he did that, that it would create opportunities for him. And he's not wrong. It actually does. It actually, you know, and he used to say this quote to me all the time, or this idea to me. He used to say, young babies cry for, grown men die for recognition. And that fucking, for better or for worse, that fucking ran my life for a long time, where I was like, hey, well, you want anything in life, you better get recognition. You better figure out ways to get recognized, because that's what everybody is really. And there is a certain kind of truth to that. There's a reality to that. And what I realized was, if I could put myself in a position where I would be recognized as a leader, as a certain person of power, or opportunity, or wealth, people would come to me. I didn't have to go to them anymore. And this is a very real thing in our culture. So, you know, you attach to that image, and then you become this guy that gets recognized, this guy that stands up and becomes a leader and does all this stuff. And then that becomes you, and you think, well, this is who I am. And then what you're not realizing is that without that, I feel like nothing. And that part of me that feels like nothing is using position and recognition and all of that to try to, and that's all ego, right? It's all, but the problem is that ego can get you seemingly good things in this world. And so it makes sense why you just tether yourself to it and you attach to it. And when I began to realize that people could actually love me without me being anybody, without me needing to be some image of success or this image of leader or whatever, it was extremely freeing. But man, was it a hard, hard one to go through, you know? And so, you know, and I think you just look at your parents and then they have their struggles, right? And I don't know if my dad ever fully overcome that one. I don't think so, but I think he's battling with it. And I think that's sometimes where him and I have, we have a problem in our relationship, because if he could just get past, if he could see that, like, I love the guy. He's fucked me over. He's said horrible shit to me. You know, if I tell stories about my father, people go, oh, what a terrible guy. I still love him. And I still see the little kid with the fucking breaking heart that's being bullied and not getting attention from his parents. And a lot of the same struggles that I went through that he couldn't help but end up doing to me as a pattern. And I still love him. If he could see that I love him without him needing to be anything, you know, there's this part of me that's like, if only you could see that, man, you wouldn't do this fucking bullshit to try to appear to be somebody. But as I see him, I also see myself. That's the beauty of empathy. And that's why love, ultimately, here's a big message at the end of the day. It really is fine love, because like anger just blocks you from the truth. But if you find love for somebody that you should have no business loving, in a sense, like when I tell when I tell the stories of my relationship with my father, most people will cast him as the antagonist in my life. And yes, he has been antagonistic in my life, definitely. But he's also been my greatest mentor. And it's like, fuck, man, like that's a complicated relationship.
Yeah.
You know? But I've grown up, I've learned boundaries, I've healed myself, I have stopped looking for his approval, which freed me from those initial things when you're younger and you feel like you need to defend yourself. So in some ways, by finding a connection, I also live in peace and harmony in my own life. And I don't have to have anger. I don't have to have resentment or anything like that. And, you know, at the same time, I recognize one other thing too, is that he's on his own journey and I'm on my journey. And in some ways, his journey has given me the grace to have my journey. And I hope that he could see that he's lovable without being anybody, like I ultimately feel I've recognized. But at the same time, I can't make him do that. He's going to have to find that on his own, and he might not. And that's a part of the acceptance process of it too, right? Yeah, man, I mean, I could go on and on, but I feel like the point is that at the core of who I am, I'm a little kid, just like everybody else is, who loves his parents, regardless of what they do. Just like a parent, deep down, I believe, even if they don't know they do, deep down, I feel like you love your children. Deep down, there's some part of you that sees you in them, and there's something there. And maybe you don't have a pulse on it. Maybe you're totally disconnected from it. But I feel like if we can get back to that, that is actually who you're meant to be. That is the real you. And all the hate and resentment and anger, that's all the bullshit that gets put on top to try and protect you from the true you, which is like, it hurts because I love him. If I didn't love him, it would never hurt. And that's the most important lesson to remember. And the image around me is what protects me from feeling that hurt. So I had to shed that, a lot of that. And that took a lot of deep fucking heart work. But, and I didn't say hard work, by the way, I said heart work. And, you know, and I feel like part of this is, yeah, shed that anger. One last thing, actually, Evan, let me just read this quote. Then I'm gonna pass it to you. This is a Carl Jung quote, and I wanted to throw this into the mix. The spiritual journey is not a career or success story. It's a series of small humiliations of the false self that become more and more profound. Carl Jung. Anyway, yeah, I feel like that's embarrassment. If you have embarrassment, it's actually a good thing. It actually means that the ego is dying, but it feels horrible. But the ego, you know, it is like you feel like you are the ego, and it feels horrible when it dies, but you need it to die.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's see if I can navigate this one, because there's a number of things that you've brought into this conversation that I'm very glad that you brought into this conversation. And they're all connected to each other here. So let's see if I can put everything that that you kind of got turned in my head here all together. One thing that you brought up was this thing of, you know, about that recognition. And to a large degree, I think that most of us are caught up in that kind of game, right? Because that was something I remember when I was working on a play, working on a character, because so much of one of the big themes of the story was appearances, you know, and keeping a certain kind of appearance, because if you're able to convince people of a certain appearance, you know, you'll get certain things, right? And, you know, even the play, like the director made our stage like a catwalk, and so it was like we were always on a catwalk with each other. It was sort of an expression of that theme. And to a large extent, you know, a lot of that isn't in our control. However, you were touching on a thing, it's like, but sometimes there is a kind of truth to it, right? Like if you can convince people that you are a certain kind of a thing, even if you're not, or you don't feel that way, or whatever it is, it can still yield certain kinds of results for you, right? It can still bring certain things to you, particularly mostly material, right? And so that's part of the trap of the whole thing, is because, and why I think we can get hypnotized by that game is because, oh wow, it's bringing me these things, right? The problem is that you can still have that discovery at some point that it's like, okay, yeah, you have all of these things, but you're not doing anything that you love. Your life is still a mess. You're unhappy. You're whatever, right? So that's part of the danger of the whole thing, right? Is that it can be very convincing because it can yield very real results. And I'm glad that you brought brought love into this episode, into this podcast and conversation, because that wasn't not necessarily something I was thinking about, but the quote that we're talking about, and even some of these adjacent surrounding quotes that we've brought in into the mix, have a lot to do with love. That unbecoming that he talks about. And as you mentioned, unbecoming, as Jung says in there, and as Pema Chodron says, it's like she calls it annihilation. It's continual annihilation. And that's a scary word, right? And to the ego, it's like, yeah, these annihilations or these threats of its annihilation are very scary. These things that we're heavily caught up in, you know, ideas of our identity and who we are and what we should have and should want and all of that stuff. That's, you know, that's all wrapped up in that ego package. And when that's threatened, it can feel very awful, and it can feel like dying, right? It's not just a happy-go-lucky experience that a person goes through. However, what these quotes are all pointing towards is that through that thing, on the other side of that thing, there is something greater. Mm-hmm. There is something much better. If you can move through that very real fear and dread and all of these things that the ego throws out there to protect itself. Guilt as well is a big one. Guilt and shame. There's out there, there's the real you. There's that person that you were supposed to be in the first place, right? And through that, we could see it's like, oh, that's love. There's a love that's surrounding this whole experience. And in this thing of becoming undone, which is something we were talking a little bit about before we started the podcast, is that, yeah, these quotes are all talking about becoming undone a little bit. And every great wisdom and spiritual tradition talks about this, you know, like as being a very important part of, you know, whatever you want to call it, enlightenment or awakening, nirvana, all that kind of stuff. There's an undoing process. There's an undoing and unraveling of yourself that is essential to that whole thing, because you got to strip all this stuff away so that you can actually see. You know, it's like there's all these vines and weeds that have just grown up all around you and you don't know where you are anymore. And then you start ripping those things down, and then there's kind of clarity that can come out on the other side of that thing. And I think I managed to pretty much tie everything together, that because that was pretty much it. I think I got there. Anyhow, that's what you got my juices going on, Brandon.
Very cool, man. Evolving conversation. I was thinking about the, you know, unbecoming. It's like you believe you're your weeds. You know, if you were in a garden, it's like, well, you are your weeds in a sense, but it's like, but really, like, those weeds, they grow up and they strangle the plants that you're trying to grow. And the unbecoming to me is also like weeding the garden, you know, like just you got to pull that stuff out. And yeah, it's going to be uncomfortable. It might even be painful. Like, there's a quality to this conversation that's reminding me of, I don't know, like, I had a pretty massive garden a couple of years ago in Alberta that I was managing. And, you know, I didn't know a lot about gardening at the time. I've been learning, I'm growing and evolving in my education around all this stuff. But, yeah, like, I began to understand what weeds do and how they work and how they strangle certain plants and how they just rob them. Like, they just basically, like the fruit, it can't bear fruit anymore because the weeds come up and they kind of like, they take away from things. And, there's a certain element of understanding that you're trying to grow something in your life and yet you're not doing anything about the weeds and it just won't work. And so you're like, why is this so hard for me and so easy for everyone else? And it's like, well, you can't tell your weeds from your plants. You can't tell what's good for you, what's not good for you. And, you know, and I think also sometimes, you know, I've been learning to grow plants. It's been an exercise for the last several years for me about just learning how to nurture plants and how to take care of them and something like that. Like, just like different plants need different amounts of water at different time, different sunlight demands, all different temperature demands. There's all sorts of different demands they have. And so, you know, you kind of got to figure out in some ways, like, what plant am I? Like, where do I flourish? In what environments do I flourish? Because, you know, you might look at someone else and they seem to flourish in a certain environment and you go, oh, great, they're doing it right. I'll do what they're doing. And you're like, that's not where you're going to flourish. That's not your expression. That's not your environment. That's not your place. And, you know, no one tells you what that is. You have to figure that out. And I feel like there's a part of you that in learning to nurture plants, you're going to have some die on you or some get very wilted or struggle for you to experience what it's like to neglect or to
overfeed or to just do things that basically, and you get to get this kind of response from it, which is interesting. I think the unbecoming thing is that I do think this is a thought that I had. There's a blanket way in which we get presented with, this is how you grow a plant. You give it water every day, you put it directly in the sun, and you keep it warm. And then everybody kind of treats themselves the same way. And then some people flourish in that environment, and we go, look at those people, they're flourishing, why can't I? And it's like, because you're not designed for that blanket fucking approach. You know, you're a cacti, you know? You're designed to survive in the desert. You're designed to survive with very little water, and you're beautiful in your own way. That's not what you're meant for. And you treat yourself like this tropical plant or something, or whatever, and you're going to die. You're going to wilt because it's not where you're meant to flourish, right? And so the dynamics of how this comes into play are, you know, beyond comprehension to some degree, and there's no way to discuss them. But you have to figure that out. You have to figure out, like, hey, this feels right, this doesn't feel right, and you have to be honest about that and stop comparing yourself, you know? Also, the quote talks about who you were meant to be in the first place. And it's like, it kind of, like, I don't know, like, people look at this stuff, sometimes they get pretty woo-woo about it, and they look at the stars, and they look at, like, astrology and things for answers. But I do think there's a certain element of, there's an inclination to people. You see this in children. They're just born, and they're like, all of a sudden, you know, one person's dancing, the other person's sitting off imagining shit all the time. The other kids are like out playing, like digging in the dirt, and that's what they're doing. And there's an inclination. There's something that they're inclined to do. They find it, and they like it, and they want to do more of it, and it just makes sense to them. And, you know, you try making a construction worker a ballerina. It's just fucking weird. Right? Why would you do that? That doesn't make sense. But like somebody likes to fucking, they like to pack the bricks together. They like to put the construction, like they want to get in their hands. They want to hold tools and figure out how to smash shit together. They want to do that, right? And other people, they want to be more delicate, and they want to touch things in a different way, and they want to move through it, and they want to flow. And so I think there's a certain element in this conversation, which is like, imagine you are someone who wants to flow. And the world is forcing you to, like, you got to dig in, you got to construct, you got to build it together. And it's like tough, tough, tough. And it's just like, and all of a sudden you just feel like, man, I don't add up. And it's like, well, you don't add up because you're a fish out of water. It's not meant for you. You're not supposed to be there. That's, you're forcing yourself to conform to the propaganda of an idea. And one last thing before I pass it off to you. I mean, we just went through the industrial age, and we're still kind of coming out of it. But we lived in a time where we needed factory workers, and we needed production, and that's where our world was moving, and there was a high demand for it. So the world, in many ways, tried to force people through a very industrialized mindset. Let's get workers who can do a simple job over and over for hours on end, and we can produce, produce, produce. And some people flourish in that environment. Some people like absolutely excel, and they just blossom. Other people, it's stifling. It kills their soul. It robs them of their expression, and that's not what they want. But the world says, no, but if you are an artist or you're this, it's like no good. And it's like, well, I don't know, man. My brother's a super like mechanical guy, and he loves putting together his cars, fixing shit, building it, figuring out how things work mechanically. And there's a certain part of me that totally appreciates that. Put him, like, make him write a screenplay and he'd be out of his fucking element. That's not for him, you know? But for me, I actually find that I like mechanics, but I love writing. I love sitting in my imagination. I could be on the top of a mountain kind of creating shit in my mind, and that's where I flourish. And you could look at, well, you know, he's productive and you're this airy fairy little artist out there using, you know, it's like, well, who are you to say what's good and what isn't good? In some worlds, where what I do is prized and what he does is prized, in different worlds. So we need to function in a sense different gardens. And I think there's a certain part of our culture, which is like the propaganda is this is good, that is bad, this is right, that is wrong. And unfortunately, some of us fall into the bad and wrong category just because the world is trying to do something else and it's not accommodating our uniqueness. And so I think part of this conversation is sometimes you have to buck the system a little bit and be like, well, you know what? Maybe the system's a little bit fucked up. Maybe the system isn't for me. Maybe I need to diverge from all of this.
You know, an interesting image came to mind for me, just to throw something out there in this whole thing. Because, you know, we're talking about, with this quote, it's like, because I feel like there might be something somewhat misleading about, or could be misleading about the whole idea of like the person you're supposed to be in the first place, right? Almost as if like it was already at a certain point, it was already understood, right? Who you are and what you're supposed to be in the world. But I don't necessarily think that that's the case, because I think that this is in so many ways part of the whole process is about like we only really start to understand who we are through our relationship to other people, mm-hmm. and seeing different people and what different people do and what their interests are and what their, you know, like it's only through that, you know, that exposure that we have to, maybe not to, that exposure that we have with the world, mm-hmm. and with others, that we're actually starting to figure that out. And what came to mind was, I don't think this is actually the perfect metaphor for it, maybe there's something better, but almost like a statue, right? Like the whole thing of like the statue's underneath the marble, right? And it's like, well, you're there, you're in there, right? But we're chipping away at what that is. And how do we know what to chip away other than by being out there in the world and making mistakes and failing at things and discovering that we were chasing the wrong thing. And, you know, like that's how we chip away at all of this stuff. And that isn't to say though, that I think that as a society and as a culture that I don't think that we could do better for each other, because I think that we can. I mean, one of the things that I think we try to be careful about on this podcast is we're very careful to not tell people like, this is the way. This is how you do it, right? Like it's like our message is very much about, hey, look, like this, what you have your own path, right? Like you have and finding that thing and discovering it and whatever, like that's, there's no one size fits all solution. And that's part of, I think, the challenge that we come up against is because we're almost confronted with that, especially in the Western world, with like one size fits all solutions or that silver bullet or panacea fallacy, right? Like, well, panacea? Like panacea, yeah, the panacea, silver bullet, they're kind of the same, okay. Same way of saying the same thing, right? But it's like, there's this, it's like you just take the pill and boom, everything's solved. Or the silver bullet, boom, that thing's done, right? It's like you got this thing that's going to just get rid of your problem, right? And everyone's, you got a lot of snake oil salesmen out there trying to tell you that they've got the thing, mm-hmm. right? And they show up in every conceivable, you know, thing that we deal with in life, right? You need success in business, you need success spiritually, you need success with your family, you need success with your relationships, you need success with, you know, like with women, with men. Boom, I got the answer. Here's the book, here's the workshop, here's the, right? Like I've got it, right? And a lot of people prey upon that. There's a lot of people who prey upon that because, and they're preying upon this vulnerability that we have where we just don't want to be confused, yeah. right? Because there's a fear that comes with that confusion, right? Of not knowing. And we so desperately want somebody to just give us the answer to the problem. And most things that are really worthy of us don't come in solutions like that. You know, they require reflection and solitude and digging and you know, honesty with ourselves, right? Like, it's not that we don't find helpers along the way, but I find that really genuine good helpers and mentors, they're not really telling you what to do, right? They're asking questions. They're helping you to find it, right? They're just there exploring with you, asking certain questions, and so that you actually start to come into contact. You become active in that undoing process, mm-hmm. right? Of clearing out the weeds, clearing out the confusion. Go, oh, hang on a second. Yeah, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, great. Amazing. Like, I once heard, you know, as I was getting closer to becoming a parent, that the job of parenting is to help your children become who they are. Right? It's not about you putting shit onto them. Mm-hmm. It's about you being aware of the person that you're seeing and their challenges and what they're going through, and just being that guide. You know, it's like they're not just your project to ship off in the direction that you want them to go. They are their own being, and your job is just to help them figure that out, right? Like, okay, well, what is that being? And I think our society could do a whole lot better in doing that for each other, right? Sort of being that kind of parent for one another, right? Of like, well, hey, there's this person that you are. I'm not going to try and give you some simple answer to this, some overly simple answer like it's like, I'm going to instead actually challenge you, perhaps, right? I'm going to try and dig into this thing with you, right? Because maybe I can bring a perspective to your challenge, to your problem, to whatever this is that maybe leads you to some kind of insight mm-hmm. that helps with that unbecoming.
Good stuff, man. Wow. you know, I think there's a certain amount of let people become who they want to become. And I think there's a certain amount of don't let someone fall off the edge of the cliff. You know what I mean? And I feel like we have a difficult time drawing a line between how am I stopping someone from falling off the cliff and how am I actually just trying to control them and project my ego onto them, right? And it's like, and I think there's also this line between people are like, well, I don't want to be controlled at all. Don't give me any rules. Let me just be who I want to be. And it's like, yeah, well, being who you want to be is going to fall off the edge of a cliff. Like it's leading to a bad place. And like, there's a certain amount of like, let's just slow the train here a little bit, because yeah, you think that's what you want, but that's where guides and mentors are actually really useful I talk with my clients a lot about this. It's like, look, you know, cause some will call me mentor, some will call me their teacher at different times, you know, they'll call me different things, but we use these four terms in general, which is like teacher, guide, mentor, coach. It's like, okay, well, what are we doing right now? If I'm coaching you, I'm pushing you beyond the limits that you think you're capable of. That's what a coach does. A coach keeps order, keeps kind of organization, and helps you perform at a higher level than you think you're able to. And when you think you've given enough, the coach pushes you to do more and you find you can do more. And that's the gratitude of a coach. A guide is more like, listen, I've navigated these waters before. Here's what I found. Here's what I've seen. I can't make you go this way, but let me tell you what I've seen in my journey. And so you can kind of be guided. And sometimes, you know, when with your guide, you will just say, you know what, fuck the guide. I'm going my own way. It's like, okay, you know what? Look, maybe you'll discover something I didn't, because I didn't go everywhere. I went the way I went. But here's what I found when I went this way. And sometimes they'll come back to the guide and they'll be like, yeah, you know what? You were right. And that's kind of, this is what happened. Okay, great. Well, you know what? You learned, you tried it your way. And that's a trust development exercise. I feel like with guides, a lot of the time you're just learning to trust them and learn, okay, yeah, I see, you know what you mean. Mentorship is like, listen, I have some knowledge, some wisdom, some experience that you don't have. Maybe I got some years on you. Maybe I just have some life experience on you. Here's what works based on what I did. And here's how I got these results. Here's how I did this. And here's how I did it wrong also. And people begin to learn to trust. They go, well, you know, they mentor me. They keep me, they show me the way before I've even been there. And they help me to find the way that very few have found. And that's where mentors usually become useful, is they usually found a path that not everyone found. And so that's why they're good mentors. And then the final one was teacher. Sometimes I'm just sharing some information with you. I'm just showing you how something works. So I'm giving you a packaged, designed way to learn it just a little bit easier and a little bit faster. And also sometimes the teacher is, I'm not even teaching you. I'm getting you to teach yourself. And a good teacher is like the thing you're talking about, where I'm asking you questions, is like, you know, for example, one of the exercises I do with anybody who does storytelling with me is I go, well, okay, first question, what's an idea? And people go, an idea. And they all of a sudden they're like, I don't even know what an idea is. They never stop to think about it. And that's like, all of a sudden they go, oh, well, an idea is this, an idea is that. And I go, what's a concept? What's a story? And I ask them these questions and they start telling me what they are. And they've never thought about this. They just thought they knew. And they go, wow, I didn't even realize. I didn't know what a story was. Like, I didn't really know what a story was. I never thought about it. And they teach themselves. And then I give them, as a teacher and a guide who's worked a lot with story, I'll give them some insights about story. And they'll go, yeah, yeah, that's so true. Oh, yeah, okay, I get that. Or, you know, and they'll start to get confidence in their ability. Anyway, my point about all this is that you're still the hero of your journey, and you can, you know, you can take on these mentors and these teachers and guides and coaches, and sometimes they'll come in a package of one, and sometimes they'll come in, you know, several different people, and you'll have multiple ones in different areas of your life. The point is though, is like, you still got to figure it out. Like, the coach can push you, but you got to decide to do it. You know, the teacher can teach you, but you got to decide to listen. The guide can guide you, but you have to trust the guide, and the mentor can mentor you, but you have to actually have faith that the mentor's actually been where you're trying to go. And like you said earlier, and I love how you brought this in, the snake oil salesmen are all over, and they're all like, listen, I'm your guide, your mentor, your teacher, your coach, I'm everybody, and I have the way, and I've been the way, and this is the success. And their whole fucking image is based on a fucking ego presentation that's totally false, and they're using that to bolster their position to just get something from you, and they don't really care about giving you anything and helping you, and they're just trying to serve themselves. And one of the things I always try to do as a mentor and a guide is I say, you got to watch out for the snake oil salesman. I got to watch out for that person. And I actually teach people strategies on, this is how I've been suckered. So maybe you don't have to be suckered on your journey, because there's going to be a time where you're not with me, and maybe you can see that person like I didn't. And, you know, and I think the other thing too is like, maturity is, at first you think somebody out there has the elixir, and at some point you realize you had it all along, but you had to, in some ways, test the elixirs of other people before you could find out that you actually had it inside yourself. And I think that kind of who you're meant to be is the elixir. You kind of, this is the funny thing about becoming authentic or truthful or really you, is that you almost slap yourself in the head afterwards, because you're like, oh my God, I knew this all along. why didn't I just do that? But you kind of, you know, and Paulo Coelho, I think that's how I'm saying it right, but the journey of the alchemist is a great book that he wrote. And it really kind of, I think to some degree, it actually demonstrates that point, you know, that you have to kind of go on the journey in some ways to, you know, to find yourself. And you think you're going to get somewhere, but you weren't getting there for the reasons that you think you were getting there.
And yeah, it's perfect lead in, because that was just what I was thinking about, was story. You know, one of the biggest things that we talk about here,
yeah.
You know, story's a big one.
Yeah.
Story's a big thing in humanity. Like, it's like, we need story. We need it. Like, it's a thing that the soul requires, you know, because we're constantly, just think of how much story we consume and that we create, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Like, it's constant. It's constant. And it's fascinating that so much of one of the biggest ways you could look at sort of classic story structure is so much about these quotes, right? It's a person's becoming completely undone, right? There's a situation, they become completely undone by it. But through that undoing process, something happens, mm-hmm. right? Something happens to our hero in that whole thing. Something is shed, right? Something is discovered about who they are, the real person that they are, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, you can see that in all kinds of stories, from great sort of, you know, big, you know, godlike hero type tales to something like Good Will Hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's an undoing process that goes on there. Right. And which is part of, you know, one of the major criticisms that's been leveled against a lot of modern storytelling, which is that, like, it doesn't have that element to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have our hero becoming completely undone. Mm-hmm. It might have them coming up against a big challenge, but, you know, like, it's to quote what's it called? The pitch meeting guy, you know, where it's just like, oh, like, that comes to the big climax. It's like, oh, that's going to be tough to take down. It's like, actually, it's going to be super easy, barely an inconvenience. Right. That seems to be a lot of how this stuff happens. You know, it's like, suddenly it's just like, oh, I believe in myself. And, and it's like, okay, you know, because don't get me wrong, there's nothing inherently wrong with a character overcoming a huge obstacle because they come to a place where they believe in themselves. But we only, like, accept it and buy it based on what they went through before then. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's just far too much of our quote unquote heroes having it far too easy. Things are still too, like, there, it's like, no, I'm sorry, things have not gotten brutal enough for you for me to buy that you're just suddenly, you can do this. Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like I got a little bit distracted there, but it's relevant to what we're talking about, I think.
Yeah. Well, let me just add in this, because, you know, this is a big thing with storytelling, is like, if you think the reason why you're not getting what you want is an external problem entirely, you are totally confused, because you'll often find that what holds you back from what you're trying to do and what you want in life is an internal thing. It's actually more to do with you than the external. And you begin to realize that the external is just an expression of the internal. And great character, they tend to have a flaw that manifests and expresses itself externally into the world. And sometimes when we meet them, they've been living for decades before we get to them, and they have been manifesting this flaw into the world. They have a bad relationship with their parents. They they're, you know, they have all these bad relationships with their friends, their colleagues, like all this stuff, and it's all this flaw that they have, and it's totally unchecked, and they have no awareness of it, and they're caught in their ego trying to cover it, and they think, hey, I'm okay, and all these other people are assholes or whatever. And part of the journey is unbecoming the ego that protects themselves from the flaw that actually is holding them back. And it's interesting that you point this out, because I do think there's a certain part of us, like, I think we all kind of like, we love the kind of, well, I think there's an attraction to the get rich quick scheme, the silver bullet thing, the, you know, the answer, right? Like I just want to win. I just want to get lucky. I want the lottery to happen. Right. And I think there's a certain quality that we can all kind of relate to. Wouldn't that be nice? But there's something about story where when someone just wins the lottery and solves all their problems, we're like, ah, fuck that. That's like a shitty story, right? Because there's a part of us that were like, I'd love to win the lottery. That would be really great. And I could just solve all these problems theoretically. But there's a real part of us in story is like, listen, I'm probably not going to win the lottery. So how'd you do it without winning the lottery? And that's what we're kind of after. We're like, you win out, and the beast that was torturing and scaring or whatever, taunting the whole village, and you went out and you slayed the beast, and no one can do it, and many died on their way out there, but you did it, and you brought back the carcass, and you showed it to us, and you've done it. How'd you do it? We want to know the story. But like the person that showed up and the beast was already dead and they just dragged it back, it's like, yeah, it's kind of underwhelming. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you just happened to be there and it just happened to happen, you know? And like, I think there's a certain, no matter how like lazy it's kind of this quality of not ever putting effort in. We know when we kind of see bullshit of no effort, because we know things are hard deep down. We know they're hard until they're not hard. They're only hard at first, but we understand the concept of this is difficult. I don't know how to do it. And some of us just avoid it and we run away from it and we do all that stuff. And, you know, and some of us actually face it. And we those people who go out and they face it and they overcome it, we have this admiration for them, this kind of quality of like, hey, you know, you went out and you slayed the metaphorical beast, right? And I think that the unbecoming of yourself is sometimes also shedding the things that you don't think you could be. Like all the doubts and the fear. It's like, I don't know if I could ever do it. I don't know if I'm brave enough, courageous enough. I don't know if I could, you know? And then you go and you do it. And that part of you, that doubt, that fear, it dies. It just fucking dies and you slay that beast. I remember there's this group of girls. I've shared this story before, but I was in a cafeteria at the mall with all my friends. Well, a group of my friends. And there was a girl that I liked across the cafe and cafeteria. And I just wanted to talk to her. She was with her group of friends. And I was a tweeny kid, like just fucking like never really. And I was like, man, I want to talk to her. And I remember thinking like, if you don't, you'll never know. And I was like, I just got up, walked over, talked to the girls, and I came back afterwards, regardless of the story, I came back and I was like, I could do this. And I remember my friend goes, you're my hero. And I was like, why? He's like, you just went up and did that. He's like, holy shit. And there was a part of me that honestly, in that moment, I don't think anything ever happened. I don't think I ever ended up going on a date with that girl, but I went on many other dates with many other girls after that, because that was a beast that I slayed. And there was a part of me that didn't think I could do it. But after I did it, it was dead forever, because I approached three or four women as a little preteen wimp and I became somebody. And then it was like, I see a girl who is alone and there's a good opportunity. And she, you know, that's easy now. That's easy. Because like, you know, to go up and to just put yourself out there, it's just so vulnerable. It's just such a risk of humiliation. But then you realize, hey, I lived. I fucking lived. And I don't know how to explain this. It almost sounds like a silly story to say now, but as a preteen, like little wimp, that seems like a real death. And my friends were watching me. It was complicated. There was a lot of things working against me. I could have been totally embarrassed. But I came back and my friend said, "You're my hero." In my greatest fear, man, and it could have been my greatest fear, it could have worked out a different way, was I'm going to get embarrassed. I'm going to slap in the face. Like, you have all these weird ideas in your head. And I'm going to come back, slouched head back to my friends and be like, "Oh, man, I really, you know," and my friends are going to laugh at me. It's just like everything's going to go wrong. But how it worked out was fucking a hero's journey. And all it was a little kid, because that's what I was, walking across the cafeteria and talking to a girl. And that little tiny little story became fucking epic for all of us. Even my friends who watched, because even for them, they went, "Shit, that's possible now."
Yeah, these little, you know, rites of passage to a certain degree where something is confronted. Cause I can relate. Like that fear, you know, that fear of humiliation is as real as anything, you know, more real in some respects. It might be more real than anything that you've ever done in your whole life is to go and approach that girl, go and approach that guy, you know, and strike up a conversation, not knowing how they're going to respond, not knowing what it might lead to, right? But you go and you do it. Like there's, you know, that's the thing, like what we've been talking about, you know, because like, what's the fear? And it's that humiliation, you know, that humiliation, that ego thing that's trying to protect itself from some kind of perceived harm. And hey, it might not go well, but that confrontation with the thing, that going into it, and again, coming out the other side of it is very much a part of that undoing, right? Even if it did blow up in your face, right? You know, yeah, there could be some bruising, there could be some hurt feelings, but you can never take away the fact that it's like, okay, well, I've done it. Like, I did it this time, you know, and I survived that. I can do it again, right? Because that actually wasn't so bad. Yeah, maybe my friends kind of laughed at me and whatever, but you know, a lot of those stories just end up becoming like funny stories, like after not too long, where it's just like, yeah, no, that didn't go well, you know. But it's like, it's those scars, those little wounds, you know, they're formative as well. I mean, it's almost a whole different discussion to go into what we make of those scars, right? Because
like
that
word, formative.
Oh yeah.
Like it's forming. You're forming
it. Yeah. You know, and that's I remember the author Thomas Moore, who's also a, you know, he's a clinical psychotherapist, and I remember from one of his books he said, our families don't make us who we are. They provide us the raw materials with which we make ourselves. I thought that was an interesting sort of switch on a conception that we often kind of have, where it's like, well, my family, it's just like, well, yes and no, right? Because there is an element to which we can claim some power over what we do with what we were given, right? We do have a certain capacity there. It's not just that, like, well, this is just, your family didn't form you. They just gave you materials, right? And you can extend that even further. It's like your family, your culture, your country, you know, like all of these things have provided us with all of these raw materials, right? And in some respects, it's like, hey, this was the first draft, right? This is the first, like, I just, oh, okay, you know, and we just kind of smashed all of this shit together and like, this is who I am, you know? And like, now some of it's like fallen off. Some of it, like, it wasn't applied quite right. Some of it's like the thing, now you're leaning over, like you're, it's like, oh, okay. And then we figure out how to reform those materials that we were given into something that's like, oh, this is, you know, like it, this is a fascinating kind of thing that I wasn't expecting, because, you know, it's like, if you think of that, like, who's that person that you were there at the, that was there at the start, the person who, what, how is that put in our quote that we started with? The person you were supposed to become from the very start or whatever, there's that spark, you know, whatever that thing is, right? But which you might call the soul, or if we want to go into like the daemon or whatever, you know, from that history, there's that thing. But then there's also the part of you that's really like of the world, right? And this world that has given you all of these things to work with, right? And it's like finding how those things come together, right? Where you know, where East meets West, so to speak, and because it's not just, you know, because the spark needs form, but well, how are you going to make the form? Well, you need the form based on all of this stuff, all of these relationships that you have with the world and everybody in it. And you need that stuff. It's necessary for you to do it. And it's in many ways just learning to hear that spark, because the spark is the thing that is in some ways guiding you in how to form it. Right? But I think if we forget about the spark, we just start forming it based on sparks of other people that we've seen, or not even a spark. You know, we get sold into something that's just completely, completely off from fucking nowhere, that's got anything to do with you. Right? And it's just like, but I want to make that me for some reason. Yeah. So we slap that shit in there, and it's just like, no, that's not applied right. That's not the right, whatever it is. It's just not going to work, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, those materials, those materials that from the world that we use to make ourselves with, you know, and this metaphor is something I probably need to spend more time with. And sit with it, you know. It's because it's like, yeah, sometimes we put on too much of it, right? We're slapping all these other things because then we need to start stripping them back and stripping them back and stripping them back, and yeah, unbecoming.
There's so many great things in this conversation that are coming up. One, I was just thinking about, like, you know, you plant a seed in cement and it won't grow, because it doesn't have what it needs around it to grow. It'll still be locked in the cement. It will still be there, and it'll actually be preserved in a way. But if you put the seed under the cement, it will actually break through the cement if the cement is untended. And nature is more powerful than a lot of the constructs we have in the world. And I think that's a good metaphor for us as people. Sometimes we're born into situations where we're born under the cement. And we're like, this isn't fucking fair. I'm born under the cement. This person got born in this lush, luxurious garden, and they just get to flourish and grow and reach the sun immediately. And me, I'm fucking under the fucking ground, under fucking rock and rubble, and I'm trying to find my way. And, you know, look at like, if you ever go to like a little ghost town or like a place that's like untended construction, and fucking the nature breaks through the fucking cement. It's fucking cool, right? But you think about it, it's like, yeah, that fucking came from under that shit and found a way to the light. And there's a quality to, I think, every person where, you know, sometimes we think, well, I am my situation. And it's like, well, you know what? Your situation might be harder than others. And you know what? I agree with you. It isn't fair and it isn't right. And I would love for you to have been born in the lush garden, but maybe your journey is about breaking through the cement. And maybe that's why we need you here. Like maybe the person who was born in the lush garden where they just get to reach the sun immediately doesn't give us all that much, but maybe you give us something because you broke through the cement. And maybe part of your journey is just embracing the you're in. And the other thing I was thinking about as we were talking was, you know, is like cutting away these things that you aren't. And it's like fucking weak and cowardly. I'm not weak and cowardly, but I've been weak and cowardly. And I got to shed that. That's a part of me that needs to go. And that means that I got to do things that are courageous and take bravery and take strength and take some toughness. And I want that. And there's something in me that wants that. And so I have an inclination and I go, well, that's me, that inclination, that thing that doesn't want to be a cowardly little wimp, a little clod of fucking nothing. There's this part of me that wants to grow and it wants to thrive. And then there's this part of me that's also like, you know what? Fuck the cement that's on top of me. I'm fucking pushing through that shit. And I'm going to be better when I reach the sun because of it. And then you know what? And then I'm going to bear fruit on top of that fucking cement. And I don't even need a garden around me. And I'm going to inspire all the other seedlings under the cement with me to grow past this fucking cement. And we're just going to fucking take over this bullshit construction that's been put on top of us. And like, that's the truth. And I feel like there's a quality to, we look at ourselves and we look at the plant that has grown above the surface and we go, oh, what a beautiful plant. But that weed that broke through the cement and all it is a little weed. It's a little tiny little thing that's breaking through the cement. That's equally as beautiful as this big, glorious plant you're looking at. And I think sometimes we look at ourselves and we don't recognize that like, you're fucking beautiful in your form, in your position, in your life. And just because you look around and you don't see yourself comparatively like adding up to what's around you doesn't mean that you aren't on a fucking epic journey that's fucking beautiful and magnificent and totally important. And I think that the desire to compare ourselves, the desire to be like other things, that is not you. We need to recognize that we don't need to look like other things to be complete, to be okay. I think that's propaganda. I think that's a bullshit idea. And I think that's important to recognize. Man, I got a lot to say. And we've had a lot to say. I think it's beer time.
Yeah.
And let's close this baby out.
All right.
Okay, you got the beer, so I'm going to pass it to you.
All right. Well, we are drinking on this sunny spring afternoon. I don't know how to pronounce this exactly, but it's like Jonglier. Jonglier. Wit beer. Spicy, aromatic, hazy. It sounds like something that Gordon Ramsay would say. Spicy, aromatic, hazy. And this is from Strange Fellows Brewing in Vancouver, BC. They've been around for a while. And this has been tasty. Yeah, just kind of nice, and it's got lots of like sort of citrusy kind of flavors to it, and it's a light beer, and I've been liking it. It's good. I don't know what else to say about it, really.
Evan, I would say that it has a very distinct flavor palette, in that I definitely feel like this is a beer that I would have. And I'd be like, yeah, that's that beer. It's like not like anything else that I've ever really had, or at least it's not common to what I've had. So, I mean, that's kind of cool. I think that's a unique quality to it. When I had my first sip of it, I was also like, oh, interesting. It was distinct. So yeah, it's good. It's its own thing. And I like that. It's specifically for this conversation. Well, I'm gonna do my wrap up past you. You all right with that? All right. Well, what I would say is the unbecoming. I would say there's two parts to this for me at this stage. There's so much to say about this conversation. I feel like we opened up a vein of a lot of good things, but the two things that I'm gonna kind of ponder and walk away with are, one, how am I trying to be something to add up to something that I think I should be that isn't really me? And just kind of like, let's just fucking let that one go. You know what I mean? Like that type of stuff. And then the other part of me that just like knows I have a higher standard for myself and I want better for myself and I'm allowing myself to be less than I am and that isn't me. And this is where it's like, you know, being cowardly or being weak about something or being like, I don't really want to do it. Like, I don't want to be that. Like, I know I don't want to be that. And so like, there's a part of me that can go like, you know what? You know that you can be more than this thing that you're scared you don't want to be. So why don't we do the thing that confronts the thing you don't want to be? And that's going to fucking cut it out of your life. You know, so there's something you want to go for and you're scared. We have a choice. We can not go for it and we can retain the fear. And that can be us for now, but that isn't really us. Unless we keep doing it, but there's some inclination in me that says, I don't want to be that. So why don't we follow the inclination? And if the inclination is scary and it goes into the unknown and it means you have to become more than what you are, well, why don't you follow the inclination purely for the fact that you know that more of your true self will break through? And I'm going to use this whole analogy that I came up with in this moment, but the weed through the cement. In those moments, I'm going to go, am I meant to live under the cement or am I meant to break through it? And I'm going to push myself to break through it because I know in my heart, in my soul, in my spirit that I am designed to break through the constructions and the limitations of this world. I know that there's something in me that thrives and is meant to do that. And I'm just going to try to own that more. And when I'm scared and I'm too comfortable and I can't, I'm going to accept that about myself and go, you know what? Today, let's do the best we can. Let's, you know, but that's okay. I'm not going to beat myself up about that shit. I'm going to let myself, you know, but you know what? Tomorrow we will live to fight another day and we will go again and we will go again. And also I have noticed something about finding your authentic true self is just about persistence and consistency. Just show up again and again and again and do it and do it and do it. And eventually, if you keep doing something that seems true to you, you will break through. I am a testament to that. I have done it in multitude of ways. And I would say that, why would I ever doubt that strategy? It works. I know it works. And it works for many other people before me and after me and during this time I live in. So I would say that the true self is a persistence and a consistency. It's a nagging. It's a nagging. The call is nagging me. It's like, come here, go there, do this. That vision, it's persistent. It keeps showing up in my mind, or that sense of this is what I want. Listen to that nagging and respond to it. And the truth is somewhere out there in that journey that you're being called or summoned to. And it's in a way, I think we have to be in motion to sometimes find ourselves. I don't think, I think there's a certain kind of, there's an element of stillness that is important. Take a moment to stop every now and then, be still, meditate, vision, pray, whatever it might be, but then there's a moment of action and both need to be honored. And I think part of this conversation is about knowing when to be still, knowing when to take action, and you have that inclination to know when to do which of those at what times.
Very nice. Very nice, Brandon. I think I probably have some things to piggyback off of some of that. And another quote, that very famous quote, know thyself, right? I feel like the quote that we started with here it's kind of like another way of saying know thyself, right? There's that thing of, you know, the journey isn't, what if the journey isn't about becoming, but is about unbecoming, right? And that journey is about knowing yourself, knowing what you really are. And part of the fascinating thing about that is that there is this thing that is you, which, you know, what you're saying, I was thinking of it as like, well, your nature, you have a nature about you. That's just, you came with it. You came with this nature. And getting to know what that nature is, and it's a real thing. I don't think that this is a woo-woo thing, because I don't understand how else, through our interactions and experiences and relationships with the world, that we have this thing that says, like, oh, you know what? This thing isn't right. Or this thing is right. Like, what is that thing that knows that? What is that thing that knows that when that very same thing is right for somebody else's nature? Right? Like, there's no, again, there's no one size fits all, right? There's so much, diversity within us as human beings, within what we're called to and what our nature is in this, like, because I feel like there is this idea and concept out there that, like, well, you know, we're all brought into this world and we're all just kind of these, you know, completely open, moldable, shapeable things. And it's like, there's a flexibility, but there's also, you know, ask anyone who's got multiple kids or even people who have twins, you know, and these twins are just completely different people, right? Like, what is the explanation for why they have such completely different natures to each other, right? So this is a real thing that in so many ways is so mysterious to us, but yet it speaks very loudly. You know, it tells us when things are just like, no, this is not right. Yes, this is the way to go. It as you're saying, it can be nagging, right? It's nagging at you. It's pulling at you. It's, you know, like, it's like, no, this way, this way, this way, right? And we can get so caught up in these mistaken ideas of this other way that you're supposed to go. And it's like, there's this part of you that's always there that just knows, like, no, that's not the way. And in so many ways, to borrow from our quote, it's like, the journey is to learn to hear that voice, right? Is learning to listen for that voice and feel it. And because it speaks to us in very subtle and sometimes not so subtle ways, right? But, you know, when it's usually when things are comfortable that we don't hear it so well, right? That's a whole other thing. But, like, it's, and in so many ways, that is what the artist is doing. I'm looking for that still small voice. I'm trying to hear it. I'm trying to hear it direct me into, like, what am I creating? What is the thing to create now? What is the direction to go right now? And being open to that thing and letting that thing mold you, right? Letting that thing do its work on you and tell you what to do with all that raw material that you've been given, right? And say, like, yeah, you've had this experience and we can take it and we can move this one. No, we're not using that. Throw that shit out, right? Like, there's, it can do that for us. That deep, deep nature that lives within us. So I think that, to me, that's where I'm coming to at the end of this conversation, is listen to the deep nature that lives within you.
Thank you for listening in on our conversation today. We hope you found something helpful that you can carry forward with you. Head over to our website, wayoftheartist.com, for more free exclusive material and learn about the show. If you haven't already, please support us by subscribing to the show, sharing it with people you know, and keeping compassionate, creative conversation going.